I looked at the last few years of neoliberalism, and I was really captivated by the pictures. So tell us about how this book grew, because it did grow, didn't it? It was organic.
Yeah, it did. It's from illustrations I've been doing over the last probably 8 years. It's really about me becoming more left as well, like understanding left-wing politics a lot better and the frustrations of seeing what's happening and what I can do about it, which is really just join with others in protest and collaboration to try and, organize. But it's also using my skills as an illustrator to vent my frustrations, I guess, on on what was happening at the time, especially through the Liberal period, the LNP period.
You actually take it quite personally, don't you? This journey to socialism, because it goes from your father, who was trying to be pre-selected to become a Liberal candidate.
That's right. That's right. I've got what do they call me? A class traitor. Because, and look, this happens, you see this from time to time. People look at really the world around them. I mean, I was always interested in the environment, so it started that way, and I'd have arguments with my father, who was very good at debating. So it was always these sort of dinner table debates. But I didn't really have a good politic back then. I didn't really understand a lot of the philosophies behind it. So it was more just reactionary back then. And then, later it sort of evolved. But yeah, he was very liberal, pretty much to when he died. But he did soften a bit. He quite liked the fact that my daughter ran for the Vic Socialists. He liked talking to her. She's very good at talking to people.
You actually thank your daughter for helping you to assimilate some of the notions that were going around in your head, right?
Oh, that's right. What would happen? We lived down the peninsula and I'm still down here. And she sort of went to Melbourne. She was studying and doing other things in Melbourne. But she wasn't driving. She didn't really drive till her early 20s. And I would drive her up. And in that time, we'd have an hour and a half in the car and we'd have these debates. And I'd do all the usual capitalist sort of tropes, the things that she would be hit with all the time. And she would sort of argue back, and these arguments, discussions, debates, whatever you want to call it, they gradually sort of made me think more and more about a systemic thing that, because you become reactionary, you just look at the outcomes. But she sort of made me see that it was a much deeper systemic problem. And yeah, so she was very influential on me. And then eventually I met her friends, and it gave me quite a good lens actually on drawing and having a real mission around these ideas.
That's one of these real strengths of this book, is that it helps a person clarify if they're wanting to understand what's going on around them. This book really does help to clarify because, well, for a start, the pictures, the portraits of some of the right-wing politicians, I'll have to say, are deeply freaky and quite revealing. The ones of Abbott are just, and Dutton are just extraordinary.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much. Yeah, they're not sort of obvious sort of caricatures that you might, find with Wilcox and some of the other sort of cartoonists. They're more an illustration in that sort of John Spooner, who was sort of influential on me, where he would just do really subtle things. So they were sort of close to the person, but these little things just sort of make you realize where that deeper character is. And that's what I was aiming for.
And so the text that goes with the pictures, like you said, are part of your journey, and it's a very interesting approach to helping people to understand the politic.
I mean, it's always sort of fraught for illustrators because this book's mainly about the illustrations, but it's always fraught when you start to put text in because you're always leaving out a lot more than you're putting in. But these were like events that often triggered me for the portraits. So, there's a lot more to be said about these people, but these politicians. But this is what triggered me and some of the events that happened. And I thought, well, it sort of puts it in a bit of context because, it's obviously going to date, we're already what, 2 years or whatever into a Labor government. And this book sort of finishes at that election as far as the timeline's concerned.
Yeah, but actually it's really interesting because it's amazing how people forget, how easily it is to forget. So having captured it like this is really interesting. You know, the bit about Morrison being in Hawaii while Australia burned, I hadn't realised that he was actually literally staying at Murdoch's luxury apartments in Hawaii. I mean, these little details that you put in are really interesting.
Yeah, yeah, the way they're tied into the elite, because they are, you know. That's, sometimes I don't think, I might make assumptions here, that people don't really understand what capitalism is. It's a system the politicians are sort of involved in, but it's really for capitalists. It's not really for workers, you know. That's the idea of capitalism. And so these people are really negotiating with capitalists more than they are ever with workers, especially with the union's decline. And that's part of the neoliberalism block as well. That's what's happened, you know.
You use quotes, beautiful quotes, to illustrate this. Vladimir Lenin says, "The oppressed are allowed one every few years to decide which particular representative of the oppressing class shall represent and repress them in Parliament." For example.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you can see that in most Western democracies. You know, I did a piece once, it was just called The Land of the Free, and the subtitle was, "The more money you have, the more democracy you get." But Lenin was very funny. He said, "The Australian Labor Party doesn't even call itself a socialist party. Actually, it's a liberal bourgeois party, while the so-called liberals in Australia are really conservatives." And that was just a commentary on how a lot of Western countries tend to misname their parties, you know, as far as what their real aims are.
But the thing about neoliberalism, which is the core of the crux of what you're investigating, is that it's, as Luxembourg says, a madness. It is really just a madness that is stealing the wealth from one group of people to the benefit of a small minority of others.
Yeah, exactly. It's I mean, it builds on capitalism, really. It's not a side. Neoliberalism can't be done without capitalism. It's basically hand in hand. But I think you can see a lot of changes globally with what's happened since the 80s, both environmentally and economically. So it's, to me, neoliberalism is a big reason for a lot of what's really accelerated in some of the problems we have. You know, it's not the sole reason, but it's a big part of it. And that's what I wanted to sort of say. I mean, I had one group say, "Oh, you said the last few years of neoliberalism." They didn't like that because it sounded like it's ending, which it isn't.
No. But that's the point of what you're actually perusing, a particular section, a slice. And I must admit, when I saw that, I thought too, "Oh, wow, does that mean you think it's finishing?" But then I realised when I was reading it that actually it's an overview of what the guts of the neoliberalist project is about. And it actually, your book actually develops into something really quite extraordinary by the end of it, which is one, the pictures of the internationals, and then the military. The pictures of the military, they are just such amazing pieces of art that you've created in the section about the military, because it's like an existential threat, isn't it?
yeah, well, extremely. I mean, in countries like Australia and America, and you could say Russia and China, they like to have their wars as proxy wars, they say, you know, fought in other countries. So it's not so much an immediate threat to us, but it's incredible threat to all the nations that have to suffer these wars, you know, and it's been tragic. For the last 40 years, it's been terrible. And I think people think, because there hasn't been a world war, it's been better, but it's actually been just as bad. I mean, in some cases, it's been worse. So for displacement of people and what's gone on. And most of it about profit.
In your text at this point, look into the figures, and And it's really sobering. Things like the war on terror, the calculation is that 4.6 million people and rising have been killed by this. And then it says an estimated 7,052 US military combatants, 8,100 US military contractors, and 14,800 US allied coalition troops are estimated to have been killed in the wars as of 2023, compared to over 4 million people other than them.
Yeah, I mean, whole countries have been devastated. It is incredible. I mean, their military might is absolutely massive.
But also their inability to, I mean, the devastation to everyone else.
Yeah, well, it's the military-industrial complex, and you know, after World War II, you think we would have shut that whole thing down, but you know, people say it's human nature. I don't really think it is. I think it's profit. Like during at the Afghanistan war, people like Lockheed were making 1,000% profit. There's these people that just supply parts for the military are getting, you know, tens of millions of dollars per annum, the CEOs. So the profit margin is massive. It's really disgusting considering what that money could be used for, you know, if we turn that around.
Well, you do, and you do show it, and you end the book with a positive note in the sense that you've got a whole lot of images that you've obviously created over time to express the fight back. There's lots of the demonstrations and things like that where people have come together in solidarity to push back as people's awareness becomes more overt.
Yeah, for sure. Because that is the hope. You know, the only chance workers have in this current system is to strike or to protest. You know, that's where our real weight of change can be. And you do see it. You know, there's been great successes, even with smaller groups. I've seen, I live down on the peninsula, and the Save Westernport group, which is only really not a huge group, but they stopped the AGL gas hub down here, which is where I live, you know. And then you see the Friends of Kinglake Forests in Victoria, they've been able to stop 1,000 coupes being logged. So, you know, they're basically going against the government. But, I mean, the forests in particular, they're actually protest. They're going to the legal counsel against the government. So it's sort of a really weird sort of time, you know. But protests are so important. And the protesters have been an incredible inspiration to me. I'd love to have been in more of them, but I have been in quite a few. And so these illustrations are from pictures and things that I've, you know, that I've taken, and some are from others, but that I know. But you know, a lot of the people, they might be able to see themselves in there.
Because they're
You know,
real.
you try to, yeah, they're real people, and you try to record what's going on. I know there's a few that have been recording the last few years. And as long as we have a good democracy, that's not a problem. But, you know, when you know, ship, I worry for all of us, you know, on that side of the stick. But
So the last few years of neoliberalism is a great thing for someone who wants to get an idea of the history of the past few years and the rise of neoliberalism, what needs to actually be done to turn it around. There's going to be a launch of your book.
on Saturday the 8th at 4:30 at Victorian Socialist Headquarters, which is 83 Sydney Road, Brunswick.
Yep.
Please come along.
It's a great read and they're great pictures.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, but
Thanks very much for talking to me.
thank you, Annie. Yeah, it's been great.